Okay, welcome, welcome, welcome. It's been a few weeks. I'm sorry. I forgot that my dog ate my homework. I forgot it at home. I went. Me and Kyla had a couple of road trips that we went on and church camps that we played at. And I said, well, I'm not going to need to bring my podcast equipment because that's something else to weigh down my bag and everything else like that. And sure enough, I get up there and there's really cool people that I could have made interviews with that I missed out on. And my wife made sure to throw that in my face that she told me to bring the podcast gear. And I said, ah, no. But I could have got at least one or two good podcasts out of the deal. But I didn't. So my apologies for missing a few weeks. But you know my deal. If I can't bring a good podcast, I'm not going to bring one at all. So that usually depends on who I can get scheduled and all that stuff. So, but today I got four podcasts in one day that I'm going to record, starting with this one right here. And so, yeah, that should fill the queue up for a little bit. That'll be the most ahead I've ever been. I've never been four podcasts ahead. That's exciting. What else has been going on around here? I don't know, other than it's really, really hot and humid, and I can do nothing with my hair because of that. So I'm not happy with that. I'm ready for fall to come. I've been playing some football. Our team is not doing well at all. We're a perfect 0-7 right now. The teams in this league are all really good, and there's some former, you know, I'm saying, college football and NFL veterans and stuff like that. So, but we've learned a lot. I've learned a lot more about football or flag football in this year than I ever had playing against the teams that weren't that good. So, hey, moving on. But everybody makes the playoffs, so we can be 0-7, and we still might win a championship. So that starts week after next. I'm pretty excited about that. We were in the championship game last season, and we lost in a tight game, so we're looking for that W this time. But I wouldn't bet on us. These teams are good. So what else has been going on? I had a weird situation yesterday. my buddy Asa was actually here when it happened, but we were talking in the house about how my dogs can catch possums and squirrels and groundhogs and things of that nature, and they like to catch them and bring them to my doorstep. And that's their way of contributing to the family, I guess. You know what I mean? They don't eat it. They just bring it to me, and they're like, hey, are you going to cook this? I caught it. I did my part. So you skin it, and you cook it, and we'll all be one happy, you know, dog pack here. I think that's dog psychology for when they bring you a groundhog or a possum or a squirrel. So we were laughing because, you know, it's pretty funny when that happens, especially when a dog comes up carrying a possum that's still alive but is no selling it and is actually is playing dead, and then 5 minutes later the possum will be gone. That's pretty hilarious and convenient for me because I don't have to clean up dead possums. But I said, well, no, you know, guys, they're not fast enough. They never can catch a rabbit. I don't know what it is, but they're fast, but not that fast. And sure enough, we walk outside and there's a dead rabbit right there on the porch. And I said, well, I didn't mean to test your gangster like that. I didn't mean to insult you, but you didn't have to bring me a rabbit right now. But the only difference in this rabbit and the other rabbits that run around is this rabbit don't look like the jackrabbits in the yard. The little skinny ones that run real fast. This is a really, really fat, all black rabbit. So I was like, man, dang it. This is somebody's pet. We knew right away, you know, that this hair did not belong in the wild. It was fat, and it was obviously not very fast, and it was the wrong color of the local rabbits. So, yeah, I looked at that, and I said, oh, boy. And I kind of chucked him to the backyard area to try to figure out what to do with him the next day, bury it or whatever. You know, I don't know what to do. So, sure enough, the next day, my neighbor comes knocking on the door. Have you seen a rabbit? I lost a rabbit. The cage was outside. Evidently, the cage was all tore up, whatever, opened on its side, and the rabbit was nowhere to be found. And so I had to explain that, yes, I did find a rabbit, and it probably was my dogs. There's a high likelihood that it was my dogs that got it, but allegedly, we'll say. Because there's no evidence that the dogs did it. I never saw the dogs with the rabbit. I only found the rabbit near my door. So it could have been a coyote that framed my dogs. Matter of fact, that's the story that I'm going with. There are coyotes and foxes in the neighborhood here and deer. So if the rabbit got away from the coyote and the foxes and the deer, and the German shepherds did happen to venture over there, open the cage with their little paws and get the rabbit, retrieve the rabbit, break the rabbit's neck, and bring it to me, then okay. But Your Honor, I leave that up to the courts to decide. It's all allegedly up in here. So but luckily it wasn't her rabbit. She wasn't totally, you know what I mean, broke down or whatever. She's keeping a rabbit for somebody else. So it wasn't like too epic, but I did have to crank the dog's wireless fence up a little bit so they won't go in the neighbor's yard anymore. They don't hardly ever go over there, but I guess the batteries ran out in their collars and I didn't know it. So they were jailbroke in a lot of ways. And they were kayfabing me because I didn't know that they were doing that. But anyway, you know, it's hard out here. Sometimes you get accused of stuff that you didn't do, so I don't want to accuse my dogs of something they didn't do. But I'll leave it to the court to decide the alleged rabbit killing that took place on my property. So that's what's been going on here. The podcast is going well. I've been listening to other people's podcasts and trying to glean off of what they do and learn from them what makes a podcast entertaining and fun for everybody and not just people that know me or know my guests. So that's what we're shooting for. I hope these conversations are relatable to you. They're just regular people talking about their story in life and, bringing the entertainment to you. If you're interested in advertising on the podcast here, feel free to slide into the DMs with that. Hit me up about that. We're starting to talk a little bit with some folks about doing a little advertising on the Taylor Jones podcast. And I'm excited to, make this thing go from an idea in my head to a legitimate business one of these days, you know. And, hey, people have done more with less. That's what I always say, or people have always told me. So anyway, that's kind of what's going on here. Looking forward to going out in the fall with the Grey Havens. If any of you've ever heard of them, they're a cool band. And from Illinois, they live in Nashville now. They got a good record out called Ghost of a King. And we're going to be doing that record straight at a bunch of colleges. And every date is going to have the like a string section from the college is going to join the band is what I'm trying to
that's
say.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be sweet. So it's either going to be sweet or it's going to be the ultimate kerfluffle. Because we can't guarantee what the people are going to know the songs or not. But, hey, all the more reason to come to the show. Either it's going to be awesome or you're going to see a train wreck.
Right.
So, you know, we're trying to draw money here, people. We're trying to draw tickets. So come see the show. But I think it's going to go well because I know the caliber of the leadership of the band with Dave and Alicia, and they're going to have high standards for all of us in band, and we're going to work hard to sort of bring that to the table and entertain you guys. It's going to be like 15 or 20 shows over the course of 2.5 months. So I'm pretty excited about it.
I didn't know you were doing that.
I know. I'm just announcing it now.
Nice.
So it'll be fun. Rehearsals start like in a week or so.
Okay.
Right here in this building.
Nice.
Yeah. So
you playing drums?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't hear any mandolin parts on there, but if they need a mandolin, I'll play it.
Yeah.
But it's going to be fun. Like, I've never done something that was, like, a record straight,
mm-hmm.
and especially, you know, and I love playing at universities because, you know, it's like, you know, you're going to have some decent place to sleep. The food's going to be decent.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be a stinky club, which I like stinky clubs, people. Those are some of the funnest ones.
Yep.
Okay? Like, I like the ones where they clearly don't sweep the stage. Like, that's... You know what I mean? That's kind of divey and homey and sets the vibe up for rock and roll, which I like. So the Vespers we're going to do Ohio Valley University. We're going to get back together on the 20th of September and go do that in my wife's homeland up there in the mid-Ohio Valley. And then there's rumor of a couple other things that we're excited about, but I don't know if any of those are confirmed, so can't talk about it.
Smart.
But yeah, so We're not completely dead yet, as they say. We're gonna dust it off and you know what I'm saying? Go for a little run together. That'll be fun. But that's it for me. I'm excited today for my guest, Miss Sandy Fitzgerald.
What's up?
Miss Alexandra.
Yeah, Alexandria.
Okay.
That's my birth name, I guess.
That's your government name?
Yeah, no one calls me that, though.
That's your government name? That's what the police call us?
Right.
Yeah, that's what my ID says. No, so I've always loved your the way that... So did your parents call you Sandy, or did somebody else come up with that?
Yeah, it was actually my aunt.
Okay.
Came up with both of our nicknames.
Really?
Lexi and Zandy, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Zandy's a twin?
Yep.
With... And what would her last name be? Her full name be?
Alexis.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Lexi and Zandy. So you have the gimmick on point right from the word go.
I know.
And you're twins.
Right? And we're twins.
So you're twins works. That play in a rock and roll band.
That's true.
With your brother...
My brother.
And with Miss Jasmine Mullen.
Jasmine Mullen.
There you have it.
Four of us.
So Zandy plays in a band called The New Respects. And I'm glad that she took this booking because it won't be long. I won't be able to get a hold of her anymore. Hardly.
We'll see.
She's going to hit the road running.
That's the plan.
That's what's going to happen.
I hope.
I've seen this movie before. I know how it goes. So part of my deal on this podcast, okay, is like, what I love to do, one of the things in with growing up here is you get to see the circle of life,
right?
Of things that right. happen is people pick up a guitar, people start bands, people start to play shows, mm-hmm. and either they're going to make it or they're not.
Right.
I mean, like you can kind of, and mostly on them,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, do they really want to do the work that it takes, you know? And, but I like, what I like about it is when you can see ahead of time, the drive in a person or in a group or whatever, and you're just like, yep, they're not going to be stopped.
Yeah.
So I wanted to expand upon that and interview these people in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So 2 years from now, when they look back, they can be like, oh, there's a documented conversation
right.
before, you know.
Everything took off.
When everything's uncertain.
Right.
You know, because it's always uncertain until it happens,
for
right?
For sure.
But so that's how this is. We met through church and hanging mm-hmm. out and all that stuff and music and
yep.
yada, yada, yada. And so you play guitars.
I play
electric
guitars. Electric guitars. Sometimes I still play acoustic, but
oh, yeah?
Not that often.
You write the songs, a lot of them, right?
Yeah. Well, that I used to write a lot of them. We kind of have all written the newer stuff together. So.
Which is the best way.
Yeah.
That's the best stuff for a band is like mm-hmm. if you're writing songs in rehearsals.
Yep.
Yeah. Hold on to that. That right there, if you can keep that up, that's where the best stuff comes from.
Yep. Because you get like a different perspective. Like you may have an idea, but then Darius will start playing something that changes the whole vibe of what you thought, you know, the song was going to be. So it's just cool to have four minds working instead of just one.
Exactly. And there's a lot of like trust.
Yeah.
I would think that has to, but a band has to trust each other anyway.
Yeah.
But that's like the ultimate trust is when you're just like, you know what? We're going to get in here and create something that none of us really could have done on our own.
Yeah.
But that's what makes a band like a band, honestly, is mm-hmm. like, okay, if I wanted to hear so-and-so's solo project, then I'll go hear that, you
right.
know?
Right, right.
And there's a time and a place for that. Like,
mm-hmm.
but if the band is doing something and the band is creating together, like that's where it becomes, where everybody becomes irreplaceable.
Yep.
Because only in that situation will that music would have ever happened.
Totally. I agree.
So you play in a band with your sister and your brother
mm-hmm.
and your cousin.
Yep.
And so I always looked at you all and I was like, oh, they remind me of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't mean to do that to freaking put myself in a whatever, to put myself over to talk about us. That's not the point. But I've never seen a family project
right.
like us really
right.
on the same level or whatever.
Because you guys, it's two brothers, two sisters, right?
Yeah, and, you know, very similar starting young.
Mm-hmm.
You all started very young.
Yep.
And so it was cool to watch all that happen again because it was very nostalgic.
Yeah,
so
totally.
To go from, like, the rehearsals that are, like, the best part of our life.
Right.
You know, to, oh, I hate my job. I hope one day I'll get to play music.
Mm-hmm.
And then to start playing music.
Right.
So... That happened very quickly for y'all.
It did. It was, so we started when I was like 16, and I'm 21 now, and There used to be six of us in the band. We were called the John Hancock Band when we first started, and we were kind of like Mumford & Sons was big and the Lumineers, so we were like totally acoustic, you know. And then one of our members left to do ministry full time, and then another one left because he was a lot younger than us. And after that, we were like, okay, so what do we do now? Like, oh, actually, Taylor, you came to one of our rehearsals. And at the time, so Lexi, my sister, played, I think, keys. And we were like, we need a new bass player. And Taylor was like, Jasmine, keys, Lexi, bass. Don't get anybody else. Y'all just do it yourselves.
Well, I was like, okay, because the thing in entertainment is part of it is a gimmick. Like, you have to have something. You have to be characters on some level.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to be able to describe you the way that they describe a character on TV.
Right.
Like, so to me, like all those things that we just said, it's like you have twins in the band. You have, you know, you have their three girls and one dude, and the one dude is their brother, and he's the oldest one and whatever, and that whole thing. But the whole, like, I was like, if you throw another person in that mix, like, it's a tough likelihood that it's going to really gel.
Right.
And y'all had the look, the way you, like, you dress really well. And it's hard to find that. It's hard, you know, I was like, man, maximize what you got first. And then if you don't like that, then get somebody else.
Totally.
But she just actually had the guts to actually learn it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I don't know if she'd ever played bass much. But
no, she didn't. It was crazy, though, like, the first practice we had her, we put her on bass. We made her learn like the hardest song that we had at the time. And it just worked. Like, it wasn't anything, like, obviously it wasn't like she was just the best bass player in the world because she had never played before, but it just felt good. It felt right. And we were like, cool, let's go with it. So then it's been the four of us ever since. Probably, that was probably 2.5 years ago, maybe now. And, we just kept working. We practiced 3 days a week for like 6.5 hours. And then we were in community college for a little bit, and I've always hated school. Never.
Amen, amen.
And my parents were always kind of like, you have to go like at least 4 years. And so we were like the typical Nashville kids, like, can I drop out and do music? And prayed about it, felt good about it. My parents were like, they feel good about it. And we were like, that's a miracle. And then 6 months later, we were signed to Capitol Records. So
boom. Yeah. See, that's like stuff they make movies out of.
Right. It was definitely a dream. Like, it felt so surreal. You were actually at the show where the A&R was there. And one day you're kind of another Nashville band. The next day you're signed. So it's crazy.
Well, I mean, it's Nashville is full of potential.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of talent here. But a lot of it can be at our age, okay? Mm-hmm. At y'all's age now, I'm getting to be beyond able to classify myself as that now. But that's okay. You don't know you're an OG until somebody tells you. So, whoops, I didn't think I was that old, but I guess I'm an OG now. Okay. Somebody on, like, Instagram's called us legends one time.
Really?
Oh, they're the legends because we've been around since they were a little kid.
Yeah.
So, like, they're 21, but to them, 14 to 21, that's like half, that's a lot of their life.
Right.
So, then somebody referred to us as a legend. I was like, oy. Like, legend should have made more money. You know what I mean? So, but anyway, it's funny because it happens quick. Like, it's only like a 6 or 7 year thing. And you're all of a sudden you're an established thing to people.
Right.
So, but with y'all, it was like, like I said, I mean, I was in the room and I was going, this is not refined by any means, but like the stuff that bands struggle with is not usually like, you know, music necessarily. It's all the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's like somebody has a stupid look or needs a new haircut or doesn't know how to dress. Like, that was me. Like, I was all those things.
Yeah.
You know, and still might qualify as that. But you all was like, dude, this is like photo ready.
Yeah.
You know, ready to roll right now. And the music was going to catch up the way that y'all were working.
Yeah.
Like, you, these guys, like, people, that they were showing up, they treated it like a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I always respected the most, was that, you know, it's not easy to, like, in the morning.
Right.
Like, play rock and roll
right
out the gate when daylight. I don't, it's all fun. And it's all fun when there's a show and a crowd at night and a cool venue. But, like, to do it at a practice situation for friggin', you know, months and months and months.
Right.
But lo and behold, it starts to show up in your performances because it gels. Like, a band has to gel.
Has to.
It has to get to the next level of, like, nobody's thinking about the next part of the song.
Right.
It's you're thinking maybe about a sandwich that you want to eat or whatever. Right. But you're playing the music like it's second nature is the point. And that was when I saw you guys at that point, I was like, whoa, you know, there it comes. And sure enough, like, you put yourself out there and there's always somebody watching.
Yeah.
In this place.
Which we didn't know. Like, we thought it was kind of like garage band status. But then when things started picking up, we actually had somebody else approach us that wasn't in Capitol for another label thing. And they were like, we've been watching you guys. And people kept saying that, hey, like, don't sign anything. We want to talk to you. We've been watching you. And I was like, watching? Like, how have you been watching? We played probably 2 shows. And the rest has just been in our rehearsal space, just hours and hours just practicing. But Nashville is small. You never know who's watching. You never know who's listening. And that's why we say work hard. Like, I think there's an element of, like, obviously the Lord's favor just on our career and on our personal lives. But we also had to do the work. It wasn't just like one day you woke up and you were good. Like, I've only been playing guitar for probably 6 years. Darius has been playing off and on his entire life, and Lexi the last 2 years. So you grow up in Nashville and you realize everybody can play. Like, something has to separate you.
It does. And in y'all's case, I think it's the sound. And, like, yeah, the looks and everything is part of it. Like, that's part of the marketability side of things.
Right, right.
Which is what, you know, your managers and your A&R people are for. They're to help you with the stuff that is a little outside of our zone or whatever.
Right.
But ultimately, it comes down to, does it sound? So I'm not going to ask you what your sound is because I hate that freaking question. But I'll talk about what I think your sound is, and then you can chime in where you want. But, okay, we'll shoot straight here. You guys are African American people,
exactly,
playing rock and roll music.
Yep.
And to me, I was like, huh. And not only that, but there's 3 girls.
Yeah.
So
we're like exactly what you wouldn't expect.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you come out and they're going to be like, okay, here comes, you know, Bruno Mars or whatever you're expecting.
Right. It's like either R&B, pop,
gospel,
or like, yeah, neo soul, something like that.
Which, much love to all that stuff. But what's making y'all different is, like, you're playing Led Zeppelin rock and roll.
Right.
You know, like, backbeat rock and roll. And when we would talk about it and stuff, it was like, huh, like, they're asking about bands like the Eagles.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Like, I've not had many conversations with black people about the Eagles.
Right.
Just to be real.
Right.
And so it was like the way of thinking was, you know, already on an island, which we can't stress how important it is to be different.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how important is it to be different in what you do?
Well, I mean, it's the thing that's going to set you apart. And I think there's a difference between, like, looking for something different, like going out and saying, like, I'm going to be this, and versus, like, figuring out what's different about yourself and really, like, zoning in on that. So for us, like, when we figured out that we liked rock and roll, it was a genuine desire to play it, and it was a genuine, like, I guess, heart behind it. And then we're like, cool, let's focus on that rather than trying to make ourselves something different to stand out. Because people are smart. They're going to figure out if you're trying to get over on them.
Right.
And so we just figured out, hey, like, we like rock and roll. Let's play it. And then you just dive into it.
Well, and we go back to the elements of soul and gospel and all those things. And, like, you all are dancers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's automatically there's a soul feel, like a funk, like a in the pocket feel,
right.
That's special. Which, okay, so I'm pretty tired of everything being on the grid.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, I understand that's not like frustrated drummer that doesn't want to play to the click track anymore. That's not what it is, because I can play the click track like all day long. That's that's fine. That's what I'm supposed to be able to do.
Right.
But there's something about the freedom of rock and roll.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, what you see is what you get.
Yep.
And, like, what you hear is what's being played on stage.
Yep.
There's no frills.
Right.
There's no, like, cover up makeup. It's just, totally. It is what it is. Yeah. And if it's a little bit out of tune, that's rock and roll.
Right.
Like, that's fine.
Totally.
Like, who cares? You know, if something breaks, we just keep moving.
Keep going.
String, break a string. You.
It's like, it sounds like freedom to me. Yeah. Like, life happens, man. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's sweet and sometimes it's kind of ugly. And that's what rock and roll represents. Like, you have your happy songs where you're just kind of all, I guess, this picture of unity. And then there's a song we have called Trouble that's just like, life kind of sucks right now because I'm getting beat up, but like I'm about to fight back. And there's never this moment of like sweet relief and now everything's fine, but it's just staying in the ugliness of life. Like, no, there's always seasons where you're going to feel down. But the difference is like we just get to play music and sing about it instead of just continuing to stay down.
Well, do you ever watch like a documentary or something? It'll be like a documentary on something from like the 60s or the 70s. And they'll have people from today that either live through that era or they're like scholars,
yeah,
on that particular subject or whatever. But in the background, they'll have like, you know, some kind of music that was like a Marvin Gaye, What's
yeah,
Going On.
Totally.
We'll be playing in the background. And like, let's talk about that song in particular. And I'm just assuming that you know it.
Yeah, I do.
So like, and I say that because I've had many conversations with you guys about being homeschooled and not listening to a lot of music.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that as we go.
Uh-huh.
But, so I'm not assuming that she's dumb and doesn't know who Marvin Gaye is, okay, people?
No, he just knows me as a person.
I just know, yeah, we've hung out enough to know, like, right. Ooh, tell me about that. Yeah.
Right.
But you've done your homework and you know who he is. So that song is, okay, the backstock of that song is when they were in Detroit in the 60s and there was riots in Detroit, they were walking out of their office, which is, you know, the little Motown house or whatever.
Yeah.
They didn't necessarily know what was going on outside, but they went outside and they said, oh my gosh, there's like riots in the streets. Like, what is this? You know? And that was kind of the start of that thinking.
Yep.
And now that song is the soundtrack to that era.
Yep.
Of political unrest, yep. Racial, you know,
yep.
Social justice,
yeah.
Injustice,
yeah.
You know, help me out here. Civil rights movement.
Yeah.
You know, like you have songs like that that attach themselves to the situation, and the power of the songs are that they can bring out that emotion.
Totally.
So even though we're 50 years beyond it,
right.
When you hear that song, you go, oh man, I remember that one. Yep. When this was going on or that was going on. And
it makes you feel something.
Yes.
I think it's because they walk outside and they realize like, the weapons they have are guitars and drums, and you go back into the studio and you write about it. Instead of, I think as musicians, sometimes we get caught up in trying to make people feel happy and just trying to make people feel better than where they are, which, I mean, there's a time for that, but why don't you just make people feel again? Like, there's something to say, like, when you can sit with an emotion and write about it to where 50 years later, people are still talking about it, still playing it, and still feeling the emotion that you felt when you wrote it. I mean, that barely happens anymore. And I mean, it takes being vulnerable. It takes being feeling fear. It takes feeling scared. Because I mean, I can't imagine walking out and seeing people rioting right now.
Yeah, especially when you didn't really necessarily know what was going on.
Before. Right.
It just kind of happened.
It just
during
changed.
Your day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously we know there's problems, but it's like it's a hair trigger, and then all of a sudden it was on.
Right.
But that song, okay, because human beings tend to repeat themselves.
Right.
Okay, and run into the same problems over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
We don't learn.
Right.
Not enough of us don't learn from the past or whatever. And daggum if we're not right back there again.
Right.
And that song is hot again.
Yep.
On your mind.
Totally.
But you mentioned that song Trouble that you guys have.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden when you set it up in that, on that thing of like, because I mean, I always heard that song and I go, well, that's a fun song.
Yeah.
You know, it's a rock and roll song.
Yeah.
And rock and roll to me is, it can be very recreational.
Totally.
Like, it's okay to sing about stuff that you aren't necessarily going through.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But if the song is fun and
you play it.
Yeah. It's like, it just is, you know, and I never understood people taking lyrics so seriously.
Yeah.
As a kid.
Yeah.
Now that I look at it, I kind of like, okay, that's a pretty bad lyric. But at the same time, I'm like, but the song was great.
Right.
So I didn't understand parents that wouldn't allow their kids to play in rock and roll bands with me and sing these songs. I never could figure it out. But that song, I mean, again, going back to times today, like, yo, trouble, don't find me, please. Yeah. Like that, like that's a line.
Yeah.
Like, so tell me about the perspective as you're witnessing the, mm-hmm. the craziness that's going on with racism and in the country and everything. Like, does that song mean any more now
than
it did
sure.
when you wrote it?
Yeah. Cause I wrote that song probably 2 years ago now cause I was just getting into like the rock and roll. So I was like, I want something that feels like just nasty. And I'm listening, and the lyric I actually was thinking, like, what would something, like, what would, like, a slave from back in the day say? So, like it's not really proper English, but the whole trouble, don't you find a home by me? I was just like, what else, you know, can you say? And so then it evolved, like, when the band got their hands on it, into this huge rock and roll song, and we just recently recorded it, and then filtered through everything that's going on in the world, it really just means a lot more. It's a statement of kind of knowing that we're kind of hopeless at this point. Everything, it seems like so much things out of my control. Like, how am I supposed to affect somebody in a different state who's hurting? But at the same time, like, knowing that our hope is in the Lord. So the line that says, like, Lord, if you're listening, then tell him, go ahead and get gone. Like, you're the only one who can really do this. And it's even been a conversation of saying, should we say, like, since you're listening, or if you're listening, because the Lord is always listening. But the vulnerability of saying, like, hey, like, if you're there, then show yourself. And not that it's a question of if he is, like, gone or not paying attention, but it's just, like, to me right now, like, I have to feel something other than fear and other than doubt. And when you turn on the news and it's about somebody else being killed or police being killed, or you're just like, this is crazy, like, and I feel like this is out of my hands. So if you're there, like, show yourself. So that's what the song means now, and I'm sure 5 years from now it'll kind of take another meaning, but that's the beauty of music. It's vague enough to kind of hit different hearts, but also specific enough to like relate to where you are.
Isn't it funny too how, like, part of me wants to, like, take credit for everything that songs make people feel.
Right.
That you write. But truth is, sometimes you're just writing and you don't find out till later.
Right.
What it actually is.
Totally.
And that sounds like one, you
for
know,
sure.
But that's how God uses songwriters, yep. though. It's like, he uses you, or he uses Bono, or he uses whoever, Marvin Gaye, to do this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how many talking heads can you hear on TV and you actually remember a single thing that they said?
Right.
But because it has a melody,
yep.
and because it is presented to you in a song,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, we're going to memorize it.
Yeah.
It's just something else about it. And I don't know. I think that that's one of the beautiful things about what you can do
totally.
With that song, or with other songs mm-hmm. that you have, is you can make a difference.
Yeah.
Like, music makes differences.
Oh, for sure.
Songs make differences. Bands make differences. Because they change the way people feel.
Mm-hmm.
They change the way they think about life mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, okay, let me ask you this. John Foreman.
Yeah.
So how much has he changed people's lives with the stuff that he's written?
Just more than we probably even know. Because you look at a guy who's in a band with Switchfoot, and he writes these anthems for people, and then he does his solo projects, and it's just more like a has you thinking about life. And we just recently got off a tour with Switchfoot, and it was like seeing him off stage be the exact same person he is in his music makes it that much more real. Like, so when he sings off the new record, it's like, hope is an anthem for my soul. Like, that lyric, it just reminds you that, yeah, hope is an anthem for my soul. And when I sing about things with hope in it, like, that's going to help me through this. But, I mean, John's just such a cool dude. Like, at the end of the day, like, he's not trying to be deep. He's not trying to, like, I think some people get caught up in trying to fix people and trying to fix the world that they forget that we're all human. Like, we all have emotion. We all feel things. And so with his music, he's done a really good job of just saying, like, I'm human. You're human. I'm broken. You're broken. And I just happen to write about it. And not, like, I will fix this because I can with my songs. I don't know. He's just very, like, down to earth, very kind. And that's where the magic happens. Like, when you're able to be completely, like, just who God created you to be and then let him do stuff through you, I mean, it changes everything.
Absolutely. And I love the way you painted that he just, you know, he's not trying to fix people.
Right.
He's just doing his job.
Right.
You know, which is to communicate what God gives them to communicate.
Yeah. I view it as like, either it's like an annoying person in the class who used to get on my nerves, who always wanted to be like the co-teacher. So it would be like, they're telling you what to do, or like somebody at your job who like thinks they're like manager and you're like, you actually don't run anything. And sometimes we can be that, and like with the Lord. So the Lord is saying like, I'm the boss, I got this. And then I'm going around telling people like, don't do this, don't do that. And people are looking like, who are you to tell me what to do? And I think I have this right, being a Christian or being like a child of the Lord, to tell people what they should or shouldn't do, when really my job is to do whatever the boss tells me to do. And other than that, like, I have no right to speak into other people's stuff. So when you take that position in your music, it takes away the idea of like pointing the finger and like, hey, I'm going to write a song about us. Like, let's all be in this together, and not just about like, you need to do something different, you're doing this wrong, but like, how can we make people feel better?
Well, the purity that's in that approach will reflect. I mean, music can't come at you from an angle, you know,
right.
Like it has to just be what it is. Mm-hmm. And people are so perceptive that they can tell when something's fake.
Yep.
You don't even have to like see a picture of it.
Right.
They can just tell.
Right.
You know, if a song or somebody or whatever, like, it's fake, they can just
right.
tell. And so, but they can also, when they find the real stuff, human beings, that is, they will highlight it.
Yep.
You know, and they'll run with it.
Yep.
And support it and do all these things. So anyway, we had to go there. That's just what we talk about when we get together. And so this is us trying to be real.
Totally.
Because honestly, like, there's things that I can learn from Zandy that I can't learn from some of my white friends in the music industry. There's things that you're going to be able to write that I cannot.
Yeah.
Because I don't experience the things
totally.
That happen to you.
Yeah.
And your family and friends. I just don't.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what we're here for, man, is we're here to, you know, break some bread together and hear each other out.
Always.
And learn and listen. So let's move on to some stuff. Let's talk about, so you guys went real 0 to 60 when it comes to the road.
Yeah.
And no shows to like 10 or 12 shows with, you know, two of your favorite artists
totally.
Ever. So what's that transaction go down like, and how did you even have a time to like pick out a vehicle, or like how did all that go down?
Right. So, yeah, like you said, we were just kind of playing shows around town and writing a ton, and then Switchfoot and Lecrae were going on tour together and got wind of us somehow. I still don't even know like the exact story, but and they asked us to open for it, and it was like, you have 6 weeks until tour starts, and we were like, okay, we don't have a van, we don't have money, you know. So we ended up renting like, what is it called, a Ford Transit, which is like a 12-seater. We asked my great uncle, who used to be a truck driver, to drive us, because none of us are 25, so we can't rent it technically. And then we had a guy named Thomas Doolin go out with us and tour manage. And so we all just packed in the van. Like, the thing was, it was a bus tour to the West Coast, and we were in a 12-passenger with like two drivers. So it was play a show during the day, leave probably at 10. Drive a couple hours, sleep at like a janky hotel, get up and drive the rest of the way and do it all over again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that transitioned from going to Mercy Lounge, which is 15 minutes from my house, and then coming home, to like being gone for 2 weeks straight was definitely different. The good thing is, we used to travel with Jasmine's mom dancing growing up. And so we had a little bit of an idea of what the road was actually going to be like. And we didn't have to like do the whole figuring each other out on the road, which can be difficult when you're dealing with attitudes and sleep schedules changing, and it could just be a lot for a band. So the fact that we're family helped a lot. But then you just learn stuff like, Jasmine has to have, you know, a certain amount of sleep for her voice to do right, or getting up early, like, don't really talk to Darius that much because he's not that much of a morning person. So figuring that stuff out was fun. We got along really well on the road, and it's a whole new world. I think I had this idea of what it was going to be like, but when you really get out there and you realize, okay, I'm playing in front of thousands of people tonight and I have to do it again tomorrow, like, how do I keep my body healthy? How do I play a good show? And how do I not get worn out, like, spiritually, emotionally, and physically? You just kind of have to. You don't know until you know. So we just jumped in there.
So when she says West Coast bus tour, okay, what she's saying, some of y'all get it already, but for the ones who don't, West Coast is just a little bit more spread out.
Right.
Okay, than like New England.
Right.
Or even the South.
Right.
It's like the cities are 10 hours apart.
Right.
A lot.
Right.
And so with the bus, what happens is you drive overnight,
mm-hmm.
and you get to sleep.
Right.
Because the driver is driving.
Right.
Okay, and he was asleep during the show.
Right.
Or whatever. He gets his hours in when he gets his hours in.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But you wake up in the town
mm-hmm.
that you're going to be at. Okay, well, in a van, that ain't the case.
No.
Because you have to waste time at a hotel.
Right.
Of driving, basically, is what it is. And it's not even, like, solid time. It's, like, 6 hours.
Right.
So, just enough sleep to piss you off.
Right.
Is basically what it is. And to take a shower and some nasty hotel shower.
Right.
Because we're talking about, like, half-star hotels. This
right.
This is what you do.
You have to.
And you find these junts on Expedia or whatever these things are.
Exactly.
And you make it happen. So, that's what she's saying by, like, you know, van tour versus bus tour.
Right.
And it is, it's just a hair more difficult to do it in a van.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you don't get to really stretch.
Right. There's no space.
Yeah. There's no, like, freaking amenities like
right.
a microwave.
Right.
Or a plug. Or whatever.
Nothing.
Like, everybody's sharing off the same gimmick charger.
Right.
Okay, in the front. And, like, you know, you're doing your own navigation.
Right.
Whatever. And not forgetting the fact this is your first roll.
Right.
First go-round. It's not like you started in the South for
right.
a half a year and then you
Which was
the
plan originally.
We I'm sure it was.
But then it just kind of happened and you just roll with it. Like, obviously you're not going to pass up a tour like that, but it's not all, like, fun and games when you're in that car. Like, we drove home from Spokane, Washington to Nashville over 2 days. It was, like, 2 16-hour days in the car. That's not fun, like, but I mean, it's worth it, but it's definitely not, you know, a dream to be in a van that long.
So, we always talk about the other 22 hours in a day.
Right.
So, like, 2 hours a day, or in your case, 30 minutes
right.
of the day is a lot of fun.
Right.
Okay, but the rest of it, like, I tell you all the time, it's like, you don't pay me to play the music. You pay me to freaking leave my house.
Right.
You pay me to, like, get in the van.
Right.
And roll for that amount of time.
Totally.
Because 16 hours is bad enough, but 16 hours twice.
Right.
You know, and there's not a lot to look at, and you're on a budget.
Right.
You can't just go eat at
right.
the places that you want to eat and whatever, you know. But all that to say, it's still the time of your life.
Totally.
So,
it's, I mean, we can't complain. We're living a lot of people's dreams and we're living our own. Like, it's really just crazy that our story is very different than a lot of people. You hear about, like, musicians who struggle for 15, 20 years and, you know, working towards this break, this idea of, like, they made it. And our story, I mean, we've probably been a band for, like, 5 years now. And to be where we are is not, like, the work of our own hands. That's only the Lord. And I mean, I still have a part-time job. It's not like I'm getting paid lots of money off of these things. Like, I work to survive, but I also get to go on tours and I get to do, you know, interviews and I get to write music and be in studios. And what else? I mean, what else is there? In my head, it's the best job in the world.
Of course. So tell me about that. Like, you get signed and it's like, do people all of a sudden go, oh, so you're a professional now because you got signed? Or
yeah.
What's it like to deal with the fact that you do still have to show up and work?
Right. So the first year of being signed was difficult because it was very much like a development for us. And you do a ton of co-writes with people. You do, I work at a place called Nine Fruit. So you're up at 6 to go to work. And then after that, you go to somebody's, you know, house studio and you write a song. And it can be draining if you let it, because I think there's this idea even that I thought with being signed was like, you made it, therefore you don't have to work anymore, and that's just not the case. I don't even know how long we'll be having to do like a side gig there. I think honestly the people around me like also are musicians too, and so I didn't have to, like, nothing really changed in my friend group because we all realized like the struggle is the struggle and that's kind of how it is. But there is this idea, like, being on the road and, like, being in front of thousands of people. People are asking for our advice and how did you make it and all this. And in my head, I'm like, I have a job when I go back home. Like, I live with my parents. This isn't, like, some glamorous life. But making music, I would do it every day.
Well, and like, this is this stage of it. You totally. Know, like, in this stage of it, it's like, we're not going to get ahead of ourselves and be, you know, Dr. Phil about how to make it, because right. we haven't quite made it yet.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're flirting with it.
Right.
You know, you're getting to see some of it.
Totally.
But you'll know when you made it when your 40 hours a week is spent on this.
Right.
You know, and it's not that we don't want to spend 40 hours on a week on it now.
Right.
But there is a balancing, juggling act of like, how do you divide up your time
right.
in a way that, you know, you're not a freeloader.
Yep.
But you're also not neutral as a musician. Yeah. Like, you're constantly growing.
Yeah.
You know, and like, there's times where you do have to you have to go home and say no to something else to say, well, I am going to sit down and play these drums or totally. Write this song.
Totally.
Because if I don't, then it's not just going to just happen.
Right.
You know, yeah. working the job is not an excuse to not act as if you already are Mr. Professional Musician.
Right.
Or
I think
Mrs.
That's,
Professional
that's
Musician.
The mentality. You have to treat it like a job now. I don't think it ever will happen if you think it's going to be handed to you. And also, there's like different ideas of like music. You could either want to be like a person who does it, that's the only thing they do, or it could be somebody who wants to do it on the weekends. Like, there's not this one dream, one no. goal. But just, I think, really settle in your heart what you want and then go after it. We grew up with parents who always told us we could do anything. So I used to want to be an interior designer, and my mom came home with like books about interior design. And Darius has always kind of been in music, and he also does like photography, and my parents like bought him a camera for his 16th birthday. So they would just give us tools and be like, work hard. And so when we started the band, I actually had to buy my own instrument. Actually, no, they bought me an acoustic guitar, but when we switched to rock and roll, I got my own. And then we already had a mentality of like, you go for it. Like, you work, and it's not going to be handed to you. And I think that work plus the favor of the Lord, like, you can do anything, but you have to do your part. You have to work and never get entitled. Like, nothing should ever be handed to you. If you get to a point where you could do it full time and like, you're getting paid real money to do it, it should be because you had years of work behind you, and not because like somebody just happened to throw you a bone. And like I said, there are times where you get things you don't deserve, which is totally fine. But going in with that mentality of expecting things that are way above your pay grade is only going to get you disappointment, regret, and probably not a career in music, because it just doesn't happen that way.
No, and people can smell that. You know, I mean, you know, I've sat in the entitlement chair for years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it took like basically losing everything to like understand like, yo, this can happen to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you got to understand, like, you're not entitled to nothing.
Right.
You know, like, you have to keep working. I love that saying, the wolf's still scratching at the door. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, I hear The Rock say that all the time. And this guy's got, you know, more money than Scrooge McDuck, right. as they say. But, like, he said the wolf's always scratching at the door because he remembers. He never forgets what it's like to get an eviction notice.
Yep.
You know, he remembers. He didn't forget what it was like to have to go dig in hotel dumpsters for a mattress.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Having $7 in his pocket and being released from Canadian Football League. Like, but all that to say, mix God-given ability plus work ethic.
Right.
And who knows? The sky is literally the limit. Yeah. Because all these people that are making it, you know, they could have been entitled.
Oh, yeah.
They could have been that person that didn't do the work or whatever, yeah. but... somebody has to make it.
Somebody's
going to.
Right. Why not me?
Yeah, like, why not? I mean, it's there if we want it. And yep.
And I think it's about like realizing from the beginning, having a goal, and not even like, you know, I want to make X amount of dollars, but like, for us, it's like, we really want to see people saved. Like, we want to see people like healed at shows. We want to see people like free from addictions and all of that from our music. And not even from like a CCM worship experience, but from rock and roll. Like, why not? And so when times are hard and like we feel like we're misunderstood or we're still having to get up and work, having that goal in mind and having that, you know, just always at the focus of our minds just keeps us going. Because you don't stop when it's about other people. When you make it about yourself, it's easy to quit because mm-hmm. you're like, whatever. When you make it about people knowing Jesus or even just people being happy because their life sucks, but they come to a concert and they forget about it for an hour, then it's worth it.
So tell me about, we talked about this before, but tell me about walking this crazy line of, or building a new genre of music where, you know, you don't let them label you as CCM or label you as anything.
Yeah.
How do you as a band, sort of toe that line?
Yeah, a good question. It's very hard. It's, you kind of have to learn a little bit more about it every day. But, I remember sitting in a meeting with Capitol and they were like, you write very vague about your faith. But it's also very clear that it's there. Like, is that intentional? And my response was, yeah, it's very intentional. The Lord, I mean, when Jesus was on earth, he spoke to people in parables a lot. And he spoke to them about things they would understand because that's how they dealt with life every day. If he's talking to shepherds, he talked about sheep, you know, and because they could relate to that. And that's the same thing we want to do with our music. Not boxing off any audience due to the fact that we have a label on it. But also just welcoming people to know Christ in a way that's just normal, real, in a way that we relate to it. We are all Christians and we all love the Lord and we all live lives with sin in them. We all live lives that kind of have dark days, but we also live lives with hope and joy because of who Christ is to us. And that's what our songs will represent. Some songs will kind of talk about things that we regret because what if I didn't sin then? Would I be dealing with this now? Or we'll talk about days that are awesome and because that there are also days like that in life. But hopefully our music won't ever be limited to the idea of what people think we are. But it can really just be about the music, the songs, and how they affect people. And we just don't want to be limited to one thing because the gospel is much bigger than that. Much bigger than the church. I'll probably get in trouble for saying that.
Uh-oh, right? You said it. Well, hey, you know, like, you got to be, there has to be a rebellious streak in there.
Yeah.
You know, to get past the point of people pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, what's more rebellious than telling people that Christ is the only way? I mean,
right.
Like, that's going to stir some feathers.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and it's like, how do you do that in a way that's, like, hopeful?
Right.
In a way that, you know, offers an alternative
mm-hmm.
for the better, you know?
Yeah.
And highlights more of what you gain
yeah.
than what you perceive yourself to be losing.
Totally. Because it really is, like, a crazy faith that, like, we're telling people that we believe that this man came from a virgin and then lived a perfect life for 33 years and then died and then 3 days later came back and then, like, he can save you. It's just a crazy story. And you, when you believe, like, when you really think about it, it's like, yeah, this is kind of radical. Like, this isn't an easy choice. But it's so worth it when you know that there's hope above darkness, like there's love above hate. And in the world we live in today, that's the message that we need. And that's the message that, like, I cling on to every day, even when times are hard. Like, man, Jesus is real and Jesus is present. And who am I to stop people from getting to know him just by limiting myself to what's safe to me? Because, I mean, I think the Christian even world is safe. I grew up in it. Like, I was homeschooled, sheltered, not in a way of, like, I didn't know anything about the world, but just, like, we weren't exposed. I didn't go to school with people who had guns. Like, I didn't go to school with people offering me drugs. Like, it was very, like, the, kind of a safe bubble that I lived in. And now being an adult and kind of seeing that the stories that people go through, and it's just sad. And I have to offer them the gospel. That's the only way they're going to get hope. And I want to see them free from stuff. I want to see them have joy. And that's why we play music. That's why I play guitar. That's why I sing. That's why I write. And but I also want to, you know, sell out Bridgestone, like play Madison Square. Like, those are my dreams, because think of how many people can hear the gospel through that without even realizing it.
Absolutely.
There's so many times I sing songs that I'm like, how do I know these words? Like, but I'm just kind of singing along, and people can literally be speaking truth over themselves and singing, like, joy into themselves without even really, really noticing the lyric. So that makes me excited. That keeps me going.
What's next for y'all?
Next. Okay, so we are recording right now. Trying to wrap up an EP, and release date's kind of up in the air right now, but this fall we're going out opening for Crowder and going out with him and Tadashi, so that'll be fun. September through, I think, November, we're doing that. And then we're playing Moon River Festival this year, which is in Memphis, and we're playing along, like, Colony House, Penny and Sparrow's on the day. I can't remember who else is. Yeah, Drew is on that day. Are you going?
I might call in a favor on that. You know what I'm saying?
We'll see.
I'll have to find somebody that owes me a favor.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
We booked that show before we got the tour, so it's like we're having to fly and play the show, then like fly back on tour. So,
hey, that's the rock star life.
Yeah. So it'd be fun. We're just a lot of gigs. I think the end of the year we'll probably just be home a little bit, continue to write, and then January kind of get everything rolling.
See what it's up.
Right.
Music business takes January off, so.
Yeah.
It's a good month to just chill and figure it out.
Totally.
Well, cool. I'm so glad that we were able to do this. I've been holding out and holding out and holding out on calling y'all because I just knew, like, the more I wait, the bigger stars you're going to be. So I hope you don't take offense to that.
No, not at all.
But anyway, y'all heard it here first. Go check them out on The New Respects, Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
And Snap, or rest in peace, Snap, Instagram. I don't know. Whatever the heck happened yesterday.
I know.
Somebody
it's
killed
crazy.
Snapchat yesterday, I heard. But
I wonder, like, can they do that? Obviously they can, but there's no, like, laws against that.
Well, you can't copyright an idea, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know. It's over my pay grade, man.
Yeah.
Like,
because they did it with Vine.
Right.
They added video, Vine.
Well, you got to think, who owns Instagram? Facebook.
Yeah, that's true.
They'll do any freaking thing.
That's true.
Them suckers, Mark Zuckerberg.
Right.
He's like the Donald Trump of social media.
Right.
Like, let's be honest. Yep. Like, he moves and shakes things and pisses people off.
Totally.
And whatever. That's just what he does, you know? But he's famous and rich.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's not successful.
Right.
But, hey, you know, well, you know? Yeah. Seems like a little bit of a heel turn to me, but... But do your thing, Doc. I mean, if you think you need it. But at the end of the day, worst comes to worst, they'll have to settle with him and pay him, I guess.
Right.
But
it's not like he has, like, a shortage of money.
No.
And I'm sure he's had the lawyers he can pay for days to
Yeah, they don't
stuff
go
out.
And do that stuff without knowing the result.
Right.
Like, knowing to every... There's a team of lawyers that are telling them what they can do.
Right.
Of the highest paid lawyers in the world. So.
Well, good for you. You know, making more money than all of us put together.
I mean, just off other people posting about, you know, their lunch.
Right. Come on now. Like, sometimes I'm like, dang, I should have opened Instagram. But then I don't want to, so.
No.
So
that's not what we're here for.
No.
No. Well, I'm excited for you guys.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be a fun ride, and Crowder's people are nice.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have a good time with them. And
that's what I hear. I'm excited about that.
It'll be cool. Well, all right then. Well, that's round one of four. I'll get all of y'all on the podcast in the next coming months to talk, because each one of you is different. And that's kind of my shtick, is I like talking one-on-one with people. And occasionally I'll do two, but, you know, I ain't got but two inputs on this thing. So, that's by necessity. We've been the one-on-one podcast instead of, because I really think, like, okay, as a band, you're going to do the same interview like a zillion times in your career, and everybody has their spot in the interview. You know, somebody talks about how you started. Mm-hmm. Somebody else talks about where the name comes from. Mm-hmm. Somebody, like, you know, so this, what I like about this is, you know, I get the opportunity to go in really deep with one person and see what their perspective is. Cause I guarantee you got a twin sister, for goodness sakes.
Right.
And it's going to be completely different.
Totally. We are like, though we're twins, we're the most opposite people you'll ever meet. Like,
yeah.
Just
totally different, like, approach.
Right.
Yeah. Shall we say?
Right.
Yeah. So it'll be fun. I can't wait to see where y'all go, but I guess this is it for now.
That's it. Yeah.
I hope you had a good time on this
thing.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to, man. Oh, it's going to be fun. I want to look back on this and laugh. Be like, that was so...
Hey, you believed in us since day one, though.
Hey, I got one right in life. You know what they say? Even blind chicken find corn every now and then. So,
who says that? I've never heard that before.
My mom told me that. She said that's what they say in Germany.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, even a broke clock's right twice a day. So, you know... So, yeah, that's me, the broke clock buying chicken.
Yeah.
Finding the corn with the dogs that kill other people's rabbits. I'm sorry about that, neighbor, but I hope you're not listening to this podcast. If you are.
If you are, then it's fine because it could have been a coyote.
It was alleged.
Right.
There's like no proof.
No proof.
Yeah. If you don't see no fur, you must have quit.
Right.
No DNA. You can DNA my dogs.
Right.
You can DNA the dogs.
Right. But you're paying for it.
Yeah, you're paying for it. Shoot. DNA didn't get OJ. Okay.
It's not going to get my dogs.
No, it didn't get my dogs either. All right. Hire me a Kardashian. Think I'm playing. So. All right. This is enough clowning for one day. I got three more of these to go today. Y'all pray for me. Hopefully by the fourth one, I'm still awake. But we're going to have some fun. And until next week, I'm Taylor Jones for Zandy Fitzgerald.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
See you later.
See ya.